Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for at least the next hour. We have one heck of a show planned for you tonight. We'd also like to welcome all the listeners on BlogTalkRadio.com, as well as Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. I hear the numbers are huge tonight. Tell your friends, even your enemies, to listen to tonight's show. You're going to pick up quite a bit of information that you have not heard presented like you're going to hear it tonight. Here we are, August the 10th, 2009, on the west coast of the United States, August 11th on the east coast and in the central time zone, as well as everywhere east of the Atlantic Ocean. And everyone is concerned about this bird flu, swine flu, human flu, pandemic scare that has been occurring. Now, I've gotten privately some mixed reports from people out there who are telling me that a number of people have died in a hospital in Milwaukee. This has not been reported by mainstream media. And the importance of this is that we're getting all these numbers. We've yet to hear one name of somebody, as far as I know, from the media as to who has died. So long before this even approached the number of traffic accident deaths that there are around the world, this was declared a level 6 pandemic by the World Health Organization. And, of course, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, in Atlanta, Georgia, also chimed in immediately. And then we hear all this rhetoric coming from the politicians. Of course, they haven't yet figured out how they're going to divvy up the bailout money amongst themselves, and already they're declaring a pandemic. This is a misdirection, like the birth certificate issue that we've talked about for so many months on this show and on other shows. And we're not going to really get into that other than to reference the lawsuit of Dr. Orly Tates and the connection with her husband to Novartis through his Daylight Chemical Information Systems, Inc., which has been doing business with Novartis for at least 9 years. And who knows how much longer before the publication on July the 14th, 2000, that I inserted in to my most recent article, Dr. Orly Tate's federal lawsuits exposed to the flu pandemic. That's quite a revealing piece of information, and that's what happens when one seeks the truth. We find it. And it flies in the face of the fear mongers. It flies in the face of the lies we've been told, and it actually tells us what is going on with the birth certificate issue, too. I've been saying for some time now that this is misdirection, that there is no truth in Hawaii, there is no truth in Kenya, other than that there are there's corruption. Well, I'll agree to that. And the tie with Hawaii is based upon the century-old banking connections that go back to 1903, actually 1897, starting with Charles Reed Bishop, whose niece married into the Dunham family via James S. Dunham, a ship captain who sailed the Great Lakes and ended up landing in Chicago, of all places. Everybody ended up in Chicago. Isn't that interesting? And so we can connect the dots in a similar fashion with what we're going to talk about tonight. Our guest is an expert in the area of infectious diseases, and I'm going to allow him to give you firsthand his background. He is also a prolific writer on these topics, and he has also hosted his own radio show. He has many, many years of experience in relaying very difficult, very complex information to the average person. So with that, I welcome to the show, a first time on Evident Footprints, but not the last, guaranteed, Dr. A. True Ott. Dr. Ott, welcome to the show.
Thank you for so much for your introduction, Don. You set the stage and set the table so very well. My congratulations on your successful show, and thank you.
Well, it's my honor and our honor. I speak for the listening audience tonight.
Well, this is a multifaceted and rather complex issue, obviously.
Yes.
So let's just try and just kind of pick at it and see where we go. It all began, as most of the listeners, I'm sure, is aware, with an announcement on the floor of the United Nations by Mr. Nabarro, who warned the world that a worldwide influenza pandemic equal or greater to the 1918 pandemic was about to hit the world. Immediately, the Western First World countries, led by America, began to generate a lot of propaganda and hype concerning what they called a bird flu pandemic, okay? This was led, by and large, by the ex-Utah governor, Michael Okerlund Leavitt, who George W. Bush brought in as his Health and Human Services Director. Now, on a personal note, I do know this Leavitt family pretty well. I've battled Mr. Leavitt here in the state of Utah on other separate issues, and it was very frustrating because it was, in my opinion, and the evidence showed, there was a lot of corruption going on, specifically bringing in a gigantic world's largest hog factory farm called Circle Four Farms, and just happened to come in to the home county of Mr. Leavitt, namely Iron County in a small rural county named Beaver County. But that's a whole other issue. But what I'm saying is that as governor and his background, he had absolutely no qualifications to head Health and Human Services, and that's my expert opinion on the matter. Immediately, he began to petition Congress for large sums of money to prepare the nation for this inevitable bird flu pandemic. And I just was amazed that our Congress bought off on this. The reason being, billions of dollars being allocated, the premise simply didn't make sense from a scientific standpoint. Let me tell you why. These so-called bird flu that was being tracked in places like Cambodia, in Vietnam, other hotspots. One thing was common in that area. There was a lot of contamination residue left over from the Vietnam War. I'm talking about large dumps of Agent Orange, defoliation chemicals, etc. And in that instance, where the individual humans in the area, their immune system was so weakened that, in fact, this normal bird flu, so-called H5N1, did jump barriers. But, the point is, looking at as long as the influenza worldwide has been tracked, the H5N1 factor has always been there. It has occasionally jumped into a human, but that's the end of it. It doesn't bind with the plasmid cells to create a pandemic type of flu, and there was zero evidence to suggest it ever would. So I calculated out the relative odds of a normal family in America, a person or individual in America ever coming down with this type of bird flu, and my calculations on my computer came out to be about 10 billion to 1 odds. Much, much more dangerous, like you said, going out on the freeway and driving, your odds of being killed in a wreck are much, much greater. And so the question then became, why all of this money being spent, why this concerted effort to go to each and every state in this union and try to get them to pass a piece of legislation called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act,
mm-hmm.
which, and the Model State Act, if you look at it, it's absolutely Orwellian and draconian in the extreme. It basically places the sovereignty of each state to the directives of the World Health Organization and the CDC in Atlanta. All they would have to do, in according to the strict dictates of this Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, is the declaration of Level 6 pandemic, and then the following declaration of what they called medical martial law to be declared on a national level. Now,
mm-hmm.
that's the reality of what happened, and so I wanted to make sure I have a sign in my office. It's a quote by Benjamin Franklin and also by Abraham Lincoln in the days of the Civil War. He said, just make sure you're right. Make 100% sure you're correct, and then full steam ahead. You know, go forward with full force.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent quite a few months and actually years making sure that I was right, making sure my numbers were correct, my figures were correct. And then I began to write letters, you know, I gave them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe I'm missing something. Began to ask some tough questions. My letters and my phone calls were ignored, never answered. I then put out a DVD on the called the Bird Flu Hoax. I believe that's still available to watch.
Yes, I've seen that, in fact.
Yes.
Yes, it's quite good, too.
And, you know, I'm just questioning, you know, the connections that Mike Levin and the Utah contingent have with China. Our governor that took the place of Levin when he went to Health and Human Services, our governor Huntsman, has just accepted the post as ambassador to China. A lot of things are happening in Utah that ties to China. And, of course, then I verified the speech given by the defense minister of China, Xi Haoxian, to his generals, which just absolutely chilled me. I share that on that DVD, where he basically said that their desire of the what they call Chinese eminent domain would be to occupy Australia, America, and Canada. And they basically outlined the right to do so because of the heritage that that has now become evident with the American Indian being of actually Mongolian descent. So they have a pretty good legal basis for claiming the land as their in land of their Indian inheritance. Okay. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
that's where it's all come and. And after I posted that Bird Flu Hoax DVD, I began to realize that there were a lot of documents, scientific papers, that were available for review at on a website called PubMed. Anything basically that was researched under government control of the NIH or the Infectious Diseases and Allergies Institute had to be publicly posted there on PubMed. Some of them you'd have to pay a premium to see because it was sometimes kind of confidential information, but yet they were there. And so I began to realize that this so-called agenda was being engineered. And I say that because there's absolutely tons of evidence to support the fact that beginning in 1997, a team of scientists at Fort Detrick in Rockville, Maryland, at the Institute of Pathology, began to resurrect the killer 1918 virus. In a 1997 article was published in Science magazine, Dr. Jeffrey Taubenberger, the lead scientist, actually made the statement. He identified the 1918 killer virus to be, quote, a novel A strain H1N1/H5N1 and H3N2 human gene reassortant. Now, isn't that interesting that that is exactly the exact words for describing this so-called swine flu, novel swine flu that's supposedly sweeping the globe?
Yeah, under natural circumstances, what you're saying, Dr. Ott, is these viruses would not jump from one species to another.
And, well, it's possible. I will give him that.
Yeah.
Is it probable? No. It's possible that Don Nikolov could go and win the New York lottery five times in a row with five tickets. What's the odds of that? Very, 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 very slim.
Yes.
Okay.
You brought up a good point at the top of the show, and I wanted to just comment that suddenly we have psychics or prophets working at the UN and in Congress that they can predict that these pandemics will occur. You made reference to that basically in your opening remark, and I want to underscore the importance of that statement for our listeners, that people don't just come out of nowhere and say these things unless they know something that we don't.
Exactly. And look at the timeline. Taubenberger and his research team utilized a supercomputer. I firmly believe it's the Oracle version of the Promis software. I've documented this in my research in just a new paper that is available, by the way, on Rentz.com, his website. You can actually go there and download that if anybody would like to do that. It's right on the front and top of the website on the left-hand column. It's an amazing, amazing reality when you check the all the references that I quote there. Okay, now it's very, very difficult without a supercomputer to do this type of work. I mean, it's almost impossible. It's kind of hit and miss, like pin the tail on the donkey with 1,000 donkeys on the wall. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you're trying to create a killer virus, it's like pulling a lottery ticket. Okay. You can do it, but it's very difficult unless you have the type of computer that the Oracle mainframe and the Daylight computer can do. That is actually under the control of Novartis in Basel, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, we have shown that the means of producing this killer virus is most definitely there. Okay, whenever you have a criminal case, if you're building a case and as an investigator, you have to prove a kind of show motivation or the reason behind it. The opportunity has to be there, and of course the means by which the crime can be committed has to be proven. And
mm-hmm.
I think we now show all these three parameters very well.
Yeah, my find, if I can say, regarding Daylight and what I put in that article, because it applies to the misdirection of the lawsuit, number one. But I think, to use your words, I probably stand better odds of winning the New York lottery five times in a row without buying a ticket than Dr. Tate's wouldn't know what her husband did for a living.
Well, I would say that's a very safe assumption. Absolutely. Now, again, we've got to go back to the timeline, and I got a little sidetracked.
Sure.
Taubenberger begins by his own report and admission this work to resurrect and recreate this 1918 virus. Again, his own admissions in published documents and reports, this was finished completely in the year 2003. And then we see the Taubenberger and his key members of his team move and change hats. They go from Fort Detrick, Maryland, and they go in to work for the NIH, specifically in the field of influenza and virus vaccination preparation teams. Now, look at how much money is spent by the Basel, Switzerland group called Novartis in the National Institutes of Health, and it's safe to say that that pretty much is a controlled operation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here we have the people that do the work utilizing Novartis's patents on their supercomputer. They make the virus, they create it in the laboratory, and now Taubenberger moves from the creation phase to the vaccination preparation phase. Now, what's the odds of that happening by coincidence?
Even slimmer than me winning the lottery five times and Dr. Tate's not knowing what her husband does for a living.
There is a very, very incriminating article written by Terence Tumpe. It's, again, on PubMed, but you have to go in and sign a confidentiality agreement to get it because it hasn't, it's been prepared. It was written by Tumpe he's the main author of it, back in at the end of March, which is, again, kind of funny timing. But the title of this incredible document is literally this, Resurrecting Pandemic Influenza Viruses. And in this article, he just flat out admits there's more than one that they created from the 1918 model. Incredible. It's mm-hmm. right there. Okay. Now, what do we do with it? I mean, that's the next question. It's abundantly clear that this virus was recreated, resurrected, by Taubenberger's own admission, quote, I'm doing this to create a vaccine. Okay? Now, what good is a vaccine for a multinational giant like Novartis if there's no virus out there as a pandemic to fight against? So there has to be some kind of a release.
And the easiest way to do that is in the vaccine itself.
That's a very good point. And we look at the World Health Organization. On July 13th, they came out with their proclamation. It's on their website. They have a group of 13 what they call sages. In fact, the group is called SAGE. 13 of them. I think that's amazing. It conjures up Shakespeare's witches to me. 13 of them coming out with the recommendation that because of the worldwide enormity of scope of the problem and because of the need for speed, they allowed the vaccines to include oil and water adjuvant, that's a code word for squalene, folks, and live attenuated viruses in the vaccine. Now, this should really raise the eyebrows of everybody on this planet. Well, folks, if you have a seasonal vaccine, a flu, or if you have any type of a vaccine, if a child gets a polio vaccine or a measles, mumps, rubella, MMR vaccine or booster, you know, you better hope and pray that this contains nothing but dead antigens and not the live virus itself. Because if it has a live virus in it, you stand a real, very real chance of contracting the very disease that this is supposed to fight against. I reference you to what happened in the 1950s with the Salk vaccine. It contained live viruses, and it caused many people, many, many thousands of people to contract polio, and it killed many of them. I read an article about what happened to President Roosevelt's grandchildren. They all took the vaccine. Two of them died. See, this is not reported very, very widely in the mainstream media anymore, but it absolutely is fact. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, the primary supplier of the United States supply government supply of seasonal flu vaccines, a company called Chiron. And Chiron, their whole supply was tested, and it was found to contain some contamination. I haven't been able to 100% verify, but it was probably contaminated with live virus. I don't know what else it could be. Okay, so it's safe to say that if a regulatory agency finds out that a virus is live and in a vaccine, it's going to be shut down. So here we have the World Health Organization declaring it's okay for this pandemic flu vaccine to have attenuated viruses in it. Doesn't make sense.
Yes. Now, may I call you True? I think it would be valuable while people are listening to the truth to refer to you by your name.
As you wish. Yes, that's fine.
It sort of drives the point home. You know, as I'm listening to this and I'm considering what you mentioned a few moments ago regarding the 1918 Spanish flu. They called that the Spanish flu because it was released in Spain, likely through the military. If you have other information to add to that or to correct what I just said, please do. But I'm thinking that this was something that was going on in the mid, maybe even the early 1800s. I mean, we had Mary Shelley writing about Frankenstein in the 1700s, and that certainly would have been more in-your-face stuff, you know, telling us basically what was going on, conditioning us to accept this, that as movies and stories developed through the years, we become conditioned by the content in those movies to accept these things, even though movies imply that it doesn't happen really. But when it happens really, and when we're confronted with these issues on an everyday basis, and it's quite unnatural, I'm not saying it isn't, it seems all just a big psyops, and they'll take 100 years to develop this. What do you know about the older research that may have been done in this area? Because certainly I see the eugenics program goes way, way back before, you know, they allude to the Rockefeller Foundation for Human Studies and the groups that carry on this type of research. This has been going on well over 100 years, I would estimate. What are your feelings on that?
Well,
I'll give
yes,
you,
you know,
20 questions.
Those are great questions, Don. Thank you. Hope I can call you Don.
No, it's Mr. Nikoloff. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
If you look at the origins of vaccination from Dr. Jenner and the turn of the century around the early 1900s, this was really entering the golden age of vaccine. Pasteur and Jenner, they were really gaining quite a following. They were proving basically that if a vaccine was done correctly, if the antigens were prepared correctly, like I said, without the live virus being there, then it did provide immunity. They tested it first in cows against dreaded cowpox, and so the scientific model is pretty convincing that vaccines, if prepared right, can provide immunity in at least in animal models, and so. We see the Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller's chemical labs as part and parcel of Standard Oil Company becoming deeply involved in the medical pharmaceutical structures. We see John D. Rockefeller actually unifying the medical colleges in America and in much of the world, actually becoming uniform in their curriculum and what they taught, and he formed the American Medical Association. It was really his money and his influence that did all of that. So we see in the 1910s him investing large amounts of capital in vaccine supposed research. Now keep in mind that back then they didn't have a clue what a virus was. In fact, they didn't even see and understand a virus until the 1930s, 1938, specifically when they were able to get a more powerful microscope to see deep inside the tissue and see the virus structure. So when you say that this was called the Spanish flu, you know, they just lumped it into some name because back in the medical literature of that time frame in the 1918 and through 1920, the medical establishment at that time were at a complete loss. They didn't know what was happening with it.
Yes.
They threw their hands up and they called it a paratyphus pneumonia. It's what most of the death certificates listed, okay? Now, where did this come from? Now, we know because of Taubenberger's research in 1997 that it was a reassorted or recombination of swine virus, bird virus, and a number of different human influenza viruses. The question that even Taubenberger is saying is we can only guess at the origins. Well, come on, Dr. Taubenberger, you know better than that. You know where it came from. Let me explain to listeners where it came from. Okay, to reassort a virus naturally in the natural frame, you'd have to basically continually exchange bodily fluids. In other words, if you wanted to create a human swine combination, you'd have to swap body fluids with the pig that's infected, and a human would be infected, and two sick organisms would exchange body fluids. But then you add the third party, a bird. How does a bird change body fluids with a sick human and a sick pig with the bird carrying the H5N1 structure?
When I was referring to
the problem,
hopping from species to species, I was kind of implying something like that.
So you have, there's a great TV documentary from PBS here in America. It's called Killer Flu. It's part of the Secrets of the Dead series on PBS. And at least a few months ago, you could still get this incredible documentary from Amazon.com. This is an amazing piece of evidence. It features Dr. Jeffrey Taubenberger, and they're exploring what happened and how dangerous and deadly this 1918 problem was, okay? And to their credit, PBS does, in fact, trace this origin in Europe to the bases in not so much in Spain now as in England and France during World War One. And on the opposite side of the trenches in Germany going into Eastern Europe. It was amazingly terrible pandemic outbreak there as well. Mm-hmm. So what do we have in common with those outbreak areas, those hot spots? Well, in the year 1920, an independent researcher named Charles Higgins went through and began to do some medical sleuthing. He authored a book, and he entitled it The Horrors of Vaccination. He compiled this and presented it with a lengthy petition of healthcare practitioners and others to President Woodrow Wilson with the sole intent to stop the mandatory forced vaccinations of conscripted U.S. troops. For the first time in the history of the world, really, here we have drafted young men coming in to serve the nation in World War One, and they were required to roll up their sleeves and get a series of vaccines. If you refused, you went to the brig. You spent hard time. You really didn't have a choice. You were made a criminal if you didn't roll your sleeve up. And so what was the primary vaccine they were given, according to all the records compiled by Higgins? It's a typhus fever, typhoid fever vaccine. So I did some checking, and followed through on what Higgins had found. And you know how the typhus fever vaccine was created? Let me tell you. They took and harvested from typhus fever blisters. They had the pustules full of human pus. They harvested that material, which again they thought was bacterial, but in reality we know today typhus fever blisters are full of viruses. And they took them and they had to take and multiply that infectious material. So they went and took the material harvested and put it into large swine, young piglets and swine. They basically made little incisions in their abdomen and injected these pustules into the swine. The swine became sick. Pigs and humans share a lot of common cell structure. And so they caught this typhus fever from the humans, and then they harvested that material, those pus bags, and put them in to chicken and turkey egg albumin. So there you have the link, the cross human influenza series in the different harvested typhus fever. They probably went over all over Europe and into Asia to harvest large amounts of human typhus fever pustules to make this vaccine work. So that would also show why there were three different strains of human influenza virus in this killer thing. And so then when they harvested it out of the chicken and turkey eggs, there you have the cross linkage. And then they came in back and put these vaccines into our troops heading overseas. And the fact is that a large percentage of them became immediately ill with high fevers, with a mysterious type of typhus fever like pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it didn't just stop with, it just didn't go into the military, and it just didn't go into the Allied troops. Mr. Rockefeller is a shrewd businessman. He had contacts to supply the German troops as well. So that's what happened. And
yes,
they allowed the vaccine to go into the civilian population as well. Now, Dr. McBean, during the 1976 pandemic fiasco, wrote an interesting series of articles and even a small book, and she lobbied Congress long and hard, and she, as an elderly woman back then, she lived through that pandemic, and she documents her mother, who was a nurse, and the other doctors that she knew back then, that they made public statements, only those people who had been vaccinated were the ones that died from this. Now think about it.
Now, I've got a couple of questions and comments coming in on through the chat window here, but I want to just make a statement. In the genealogical research I do, I've, of course, come upon many, many shipping records, and you would be amazed if you spent a couple of days looking at the various ships that come in from different parts of the world. Just into Ellis Island alone, thousands and thousands of people in a basically a floating can across the ocean, being subjected to adverse conditions and obviously some sanitation concerns. One normally considers when you say, "Well, this came from a chicken or this came from a hog or a pig," that, or a human, that someone made contact with that animal. But that could be introduced through improperly cooked food, where the virus is alive in the meat, or intentionally exposing people to those viruses by maybe transporting those animals, which was also done. They didn't always kill the animals as they were before they began their voyage across the ocean. Some in more modern times, they could make that trip, let's say, from Bremerhaven to New York in roughly a week. In some cases, if they were swinging down into some of the ports around France and then over to England, Southampton, for example, it might take up to a month. It would just depend on who was on those ships. But there's a lot of information that can be gleaned from those records. And what I'm implying here is that the method for spreading it was there because of ship travel, massive amounts of people that easily could have been vaccinated for something that they were told they might catch when they come to the United States, where this very thing that we're talking about occurring today in 2009, or at least them trying to cause it to happen, could have been conducted just like you described. And I certainly think that mass transportation is one way that was done. Now, a quick question. Dr. Royal Raymond Rife invented the Rife microscope in the 1920s. What do you think of his research stating that he could witness virus cultures? And in general, what do you think of his research? There's a note here that he passed away in 1971.
Right. Well, he was working on a more powerful microscope, and I believe if you read his papers, you see the dates that he actually saw the virus. This was in the 1930s and even into the 40s. So don't confuse the time frames. Yeah, he did his research starting in the 20s, and he's a fantastic research doctor and that. But the actual structures of the viruses and even the naming of it didn't happen until the 1930s.
Okay. There is a reference to his universal microscope, which could magnify objects 60,000 times their normal size.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was in 1933.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
In the 1930s. Again, even though there were people and pioneers like Dr. Rife, the general consensus of the medical establishment about viruses being real, it didn't really happen to the 1938 era, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That frame. So you have to realize that all of this was kind of an evolution of science too, okay?
Yes.
And so we have to really get back to the origins. We have to go back to what was the most likely cause of this. Now, you know, people coming in contact with chickens and the eggs of the chickens and swine. Yeah, it's happened all the time. You know, it's very possible they could catch some kind of a singlet virus from them, but to have that recombine and reassort in that way. Again, it takes time for the bodily fluids and infection of the fluids to start to group together. Viruses are pretty fragile, really. They don't last too long outside of the body, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, light is their biggest enemy, I think.
That's right.
Yes. Now, we could spend the whole show on this topic, and people would get a lot out of this, but I think it's important for us to get to the point, having established somewhat of a solid foundation as to how this has been done over the years, and it's done intentionally. This is no accident. These viruses are created and manipulated in laboratories with the intention of loosing them on the public.
Well, in the later years, yes, but I'll give John D. Rockefeller and his scientists this much. This was an accident. Back then, I really am firmly convinced they had no premeditation. They didn't even know what a virus was. They really thought they had something good with eliminating typhus fever. This was a very tragic accident. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
50 some odd million, it depends on what report you look at, worldwide dying. Well, okay, it was a bad thing. Let's just not ever make the mistake again, and let's fess up to it. Let's tell the truth, like Higgins did, as to the root cause of it. Nothing else fits the blanks,
mm-hmm.
Don. Nothing else is as clear as how this could be recombined and injected into the blood. Inoculation of this disease is how it happened, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And so from this, now from 1997, we find the scientists now with the supercomputer can find out exactly how and why this was so virulent, and then weaponize it. That's the key word, is weaponizing it.
Yes.
Now, why would they want to weaponize this? For what world agenda and purpose? And that it has to follow with the planned eugenics and depopulation agenda. And I think it's very important to bring out to the listeners, again, what happened back in 1974. During the Nixon administration, we had his Secretary of State, Dr. Henry Kissinger, and the foreign policy advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, advocating by means of a secret memorandum called NSSM-200, the use of biological weaponry to depopulate certain segments of the Earth for the sole purpose of gaining control in the hands of the elite few, the regions in question, natural resources. This is an amazing, amazing criminal document, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the reasons why the Watergate scandal broke so quickly and swiftly. It was like a misdirection. The thing that concerned our Congress more than anything else was this Nazi type of eugenics program. Now, I think that after the impeachment, and again, here's come President Ford into the White House and giving a full pardon to President Nixon. I think it's just a real strange coincidence that this vaccine is just happens to be available for, again, a false flag, non-existent swine flu outbreak that was reported by the powers that be, that a soldier at Fort Dix falls sick with what they call a strange novel swine virus. So everybody gets sucked into the hype. 40 million people get a vaccine that's really proven to be very unsafe, and many, many people die, and many, many more get permanently crippled and disabled. There's a fantastic 60 Minutes story in 1979 that went back and looked at what really happened during 1976. Go onto YouTube, just type in the search engine, 1979 60 Minutes Swine Flu. Watch that for 15 minutes and see if you don't get upset. And it's just... it's happening again now, but it's different in the fact that now they have a real virus that they have released.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now,
and the whole world is their oyster now.
Yeah, or I should say true. the work that you've done, and I've seen several DVDs that you've done. Don and Ingrid actually sent me your work prior to the Olympics last year. You were sounding the alarm back then, and again, China comes into play, that the document that I inserted into this aforementioned article about the Tate's lawsuit came from a Chinese website. I was underscoring your research and underscoring that this is an international conspiracy. This is the World Health Organization, the International Monetary Fund, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, UN. It all ties in very neatly. And the point that I want to make here is that the current effort now is to try to discredit the information you've been bringing out for a number of years. And,
yeah,
and it's not just recently you've been doing this. You've been doing this for many years, haven't you?
Well, I got to tell you what happened. You know, I was watching the opening ceremonies there in Beijing during the Olympics, and they were scheduled to begin precisely at 08 and 8 seconds on 8-8 of 08. There were,
yes.
The eights were wild. Now, in the Chinese numerology, an 8 is a symbol of ascendancy and luck tied with the dragon of all things, okay? It's a very, very
yes.
good luck omen. And there were 2008 drummers in that opening ceremony. I had a friend who was in the Army Signal Corps during the Korean War. And he had read my document and seen my video. And he called me almost in tears. He's an elderly gentleman in his 70s. He said, "Oh, my God, they were given the attack signal. He said, "A lot of times the Chinese troops in Korea would attack with a bugle call and a drum call. And we were able to graph what they were signaling." See, in the Great Wall of China, there's these drum towers positioned all along the way, and that's how they would give coded signals by their drum corps.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that's their all-out attack signal on their drum corps they were given at the Olympics.
Yes, and they even synchronized that with light. They used MIDI drums. They had MIDI strips, sensors there, that would flash lights along with it so that the deaf could partake of the mantra.
So what do we have right after the Olympics were completed? Okay, we saw all of the rapid increase before the Olympics of the gas prices through the first part of 2008. Diesel prices went sky high, so did the raw crude oil. And my sources tell me the primary reason for that was China was buying everything in sight and driving up the price of the futures. And when the Olympics were concluded, China quit buying everything. They quit buying U.S. Treasury debentures. In fact, they even put them out on the open world market. They wanted to sell. So what happened? The price of oil and gas plummets, and our U.S. Treasuries go into real funk. And so we couldn't really keep the mortgages going because there was no purchase of the debentures. They flexed their muscles. In other words, they flexed their muscles powerfully. And the result is the bubble that we're still experiencing and the bailouts. It's just because, again, the Chinese know they have us over the barrel economically. The first thing that Barack Obama did in his first days of after taking office is to send Hillary Clinton to China to get the Chinese back online. And I have very good sources that say she promised to give them collateral on their loans with U.S. public land.
Yes.
As collateral. So if it defaults, they possess our Forest Service and BLM lands.
Mm-hmm. That plays into the real estate fraud and the corruption going on through the court systems, the judges' illegal trust pools, and attorneys, and on and on and on. Bogus derivatives and hedge funds, formerly stored in offshore accounts, which now are not in compliance with Basel II and Basel III. So they need startup money. And this flu pandemic is one such vehicle to create an enormous amount of money to enter back into this pool of illegal, secret, tax-free trading conducted by the government, the SEC, Wall Street, and some foreign banks, Deutsche Bank being one, HSBC, another one, which is basically a CIA bank anyway. I could go on and on and on with that, but I'm just sort of tying all that together, what you said, because that is true. But it's about corruption. You see, this is all about making money and wielding power over us, using the most evil means through which to dispense with us.
And that's not even counting the private mortgage debentures, the private mortgage companies funded by Chinese money during the Clinton administration. He allowed them to come in wide open. So about the same time, just previous to Hillary's visit to China, the the Chinese People's Liberation Army actually petitioned the World Court at The Hague to allow Chinese police, meaning the People's Liberation Army regulars, to be deployed to repossess mortgage assets that they owned. And the World Court said, yeah, you own the debenture, if it defaults, you get it, and you can use your own troops. So, you know, that's the setup, folks.
Yes, so the national level exercise that we've been experiencing over the past week or so actually was the movement of the military vehicles with the UN logos so that when they decide they're going to enforce that right, that they have the vehicles in place. Doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, frankly, the Chinese have a right. It's their assets for whatever that's worth, okay? It's just a matter of absolute high treason, in my opinion.
Yeah. My next thought is, what do you feel the American people will do if they ever wake up to this reality?
Well, that's another reason I think this vaccine is so critical. If you have, it was amply proven by the Gulf War experiment with the anthrax vaccine containing squalene, oil and water. We find that the amazing thing happened. The more healthy and vibrant the soldier was, and you know, in its prime, 18 to 36 years of age, the more virile and healthy immune system, the more incredibly devastating the squalene was to the immune system itself. It causes an overreaction where the immune system starts to attack the body itself, and that caused the so-called Gulf War syndrome and the incredible wide variety of autoimmune disorders that they experienced. Folks, whenever you have this squalene adjuvant put into these vaccines, it's 100% sure you're going to have some type of immunostimulation going on. And it's not, and all the things that could happen, all of them are bad. So,
yes.
Now, you know, the other point to this is, this is a slow reaction. The Gulf War veterans really didn't get sick right away. It took months, not half a year or so, before they started getting debilitating symptoms. So when this vaccine is basically put out and millions of Americans, if not billions of people worldwide, get it, look for it to be a slow, sustained reaction in 6 months to a year. Now, when this all starts to come out, that's the real pandemic, and it just so happens that Big Pharma have immunosuppressant drugs to stop the immune system from doing what it's doing. But guess what? You have to be on these every week, every month, for the rest of your life. You are completely shackled with a ball and chain to Big Pharma. Now, I don't think that's just an accident either.
Yeah. Now, on my last Friday night show with scientist inventor Jim Murray, who has somewhat of a Tesla-type background, so he's not your typical or prototypical scientist, nor inventor, and he's into the type of work that Tesla did very much. He referred to a device that Tesla created called the Violet Ray. Some refer to it as the Purple Ray machine.
Yeah,
it's a $15 device that anyone can build or anyone could acquire very cheaply that would totally destroy these viruses by putting a 100 milliamp charge into the bloodstream. It's as simple as that. And Jim described the makeup of the virus and its basic protein outer shell that can't stand that little of a charge, that it would literally kill all of the viruses themselves.
Right.
It's remarkable to hear all that. But before we get into solutions, I think I'd like to explore this current effort to debunk your work, to discredit your work. And this came in the form of a so-called lawsuit that was being filed first in Europe and then in New Jersey against the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control. I find that name to be strange. Anyway, they're controlling disease. They're not curing it. You know,
I call it the Center for Disease Creation.
Yeah, yes, exactly. We could come up with 100 names probably. And then even the President of the United States, that this is being done intentionally. Well, we see the Rockefeller connection, and you mentioned Bush on one occasion, and China comes up, and Europe comes up, and we have this person who is of German descent living in Austria, where the financial corruption is centered through the Ameritrust Group, the Wantagate trillions. Leo Wanta set up his main office right there in Austria. And it rings true that George H.W. Bush is somehow behind this, that this whole thing is a psyop, because its only intention is to discredit your work by putting an absolute incompetent and a faker at that at the forefront of this lawsuit. And I'm talking about an individual in New Jersey who is, though they've received thousands of dollars, that's we know now that is traceable. We have the evidence that this individual was paid thousands of dollars and has filed an informa pauperis document with the court, with the federal court, claiming indigence. Okay? And I used the phrase earlier today that a five-year-old drunk out of his mind could write a better document and submit it to a federal court. It's below layman's terms, the language that's used. And
well, let me just say that from day one, the goal of myself and the team that I have assembled was to do this scientifically and systematically. You don't go making charges like this willy-nilly. You better have your T's crossed and your I's dotted, because the whole subject is incredible. Credibility is an issue just to begin with. Oh, these guys are saying that their own government created a killer virus and released it, and they have a vaccine. You know, you gotta have the evidence, and you gotta make sure it's valid. All right?
Yes.
And you just don't go out. We're talking about some very powerful, high-level people, just starting with Taubenberger and Tumpy. Okay? You gotta bring the case solidly, and you gotta go through channels. You've got to go to, first of all, an objective and open-minded U.S. attorney, because this is federal charges. You got to get them to sit down and see it and see the big picture. Then you got to have them convene a grand jury, and you got to get an indictment. You just don't go file something and throw it out there to the FBI. That'll be thrown away, and you'll just blow the whole cover.
Yeah,
that's exactly what this lady in Austria has done.
Yes.
We brought her in as, you know, anybody that wants to come into our group that can bring some valid help, we welcome them with open arms. We're not snobby and nose in the air, but we trust people to do what they say they're going to do and then be a part of the team and not put a torpedo in the ship, okay?
Yes, personally, I followed this story for a very short amount of time. I can say distinctly, 3 days. That's it. That's all I've invested into that. But standing outside the box, watching what's going on, it's very evident that you supplied the majority of the information that's being used, and it was presented in a very unprofessional and really in a dubious way, a very misleading way. We have... If the information we have is true on the financing, several frauds have been committed.
Absolutely.
Okay. Leading someone to believe their name is included in the lawsuit. In fact, the woman in Austria has not put her name in the lawsuit, from what I've seen. And there's an individual who represented himself as a lawyer and took this money, has filed it pro se in the court and claims indigence. So It's filled with lies, this whole, you know, that whole thing. The only purpose for that is to discredit your work and anyone else who's putting the truth out about these viruses.
Yeah, it's, now, you see, yeah, there's the odds of this going into a meaningful indictment are slim to begin with.
Yes.
Let's be honest and realistic. And you surely don't go and throw around charges against President Obama. Whether you agree with what he's doing or whether you you don't think he's qualified, that's your own opinion. But you know what? The bottom line is he is occupying the Oval Office, and he has the full protection of Homeland Security contingents and civil Secret Service people. You go around making threats as an American citizen, you're going to be put under a microscope right quick with Secret Service and Homeland Security, and they may just come and take you in for questioning.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't go there. We go after the people we know by their own admission did this work. And we go and just want to find evidence. An indictment by a grand jury is not a guilty verdict. It's a thing. We now have rights to go and do discovery. Okay? That's what we want to have happen.
Now, I'm sure you've asked the question. I've been doing this work. It's gotten a lot of notoriety. People around the world are listening to this show tonight, and this isn't the first time your information has gone out there for the public's benefit, and nothing is being done about this because someone stands to make billions, if not trillions of dollars, selling these vaccines. And there's a lot that's many years and a lot of money has been invested in creating this and planning this. They do not wish to see it fail at this point. So they're gearing up to push it down our throats. And do you ask yourself why those in Congress aren't doing anything about this? I mean, sincerely, this is an intelligent conversation we're having here. We're not just casting meaningless, groundless dispersions
right.
for the sake of defaming someone. You know, they know what's going on. They own the stock, I would venture to guess.
Well, I have asked myself that question, and again, I would parallel. I went into my Utah State Health Department with another group of people. We met with Dr. Sunwell, who's the head of the health department, and we listened politely. He presented his take on why vaccines were good, and why he was going to push the vaccine no matter what. We said, or anything, he was in that camp. But then I respectfully said to him, Dr. Sunwell, you're the chief health professional here. Do you know about this, the work of Dr. Taubenberger? Showed him the documents. And he didn't. He didn't know. Then his response was, they've recreated this killer virus. It's in a level 3 secure facility. It's safe. It's not a problem. And my response to him, just like the Ames strain of anthrax was secure and safe, but was released for a terrorist attack against our own Senator Daschle? He goes, oh, yeah. And then there was the Washington Post story of over 9,200 vials of some very pathogenic viruses being misplaced or lost. Where do those go? Who has those? Still questions the Army is not fessing up to. And by the time I got all this to him, I said, how do you know this pandemic is not weaponized release? And he couldn't answer. And I said, now look at the other part of the coin. This is not a normal vaccine. This is a novel type of fast track without testing. And I showed him the evidence on squalene. Gary Matsumoto's great work, the Vaccine A, his book. Showed him all the evidence from UCLA's testing about squalene, about oil and water adjuvants. There's not one that's safe. And I said, here's the World Health Organization saying it's okay to put this in. Dr. Sunwell, here's the bottom line. We have truth and labeling laws in this country. I can go down to the grocery store and get a bag of Cheetos and find out exactly what's in that bag of Cheetos. And if I know enough about MSG and monosodium structures like that, I can choose not to put that in my body. Nobody from this office and this government agency is going to say, you have to take these Cheetos and eat them today.
Yes.
What's happening with this vaccine is very simple. You, Dr. Sunwell, and your epidemiologist next to you, or nobody in this room can tell me today what is in that ingredients list of that vaccine. And you won't know either. So why should we trust you to roll up our arm and put this directly in our bloodstream, not into our stomach, into our bloodstream, without knowing what's in it?
Yes. Now, one wonders how this is going to interact with high-definition television. I'm serious about this.
I know. Absolutely.
You know, the government is really concerned about our TV viewing quality these days, aren't they?
Well, it all goes to the Gwen Towers. And, by the way, that digital TV signal, it was the extra 300% more bandwidth that it created going to digital. Do you realize that a full 33% of the most prime stations went to DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, for use for emergencies?
Yeah, I knew that was going on. I didn't know it was that much. I know that they're using
33%, a full third of the increased bandwidth went to DHS.
Wow. And what comes to mind is chemtrails, the toxins in our water and in our food. Lord knows what they're spreading around. I would, if I use my intuition, I would say that there are diseases being purposely scattered about the planet that will interact with that, and likely with depleted uranium, which is really, you know, we're not hearing anything about that. What
right.
impact do those have in conjunction with these intentional viruses, or I should say vaccines, these killer vaccines?
Well, yeah, the DU issue is very concerning as well, but. You know, a lot of the chemtrail is hard to get really definitive. A lot of speculation there. There is something very wrong with that. It's not normal vapor trails. That's obvious. Looking at what we do know, the evidence shows there's some sort of a barium isotope that's in those. Go back to Dr. Nick Begich's book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, and the whole. Sensors of the satellites for surveillance for all of that goes back to the need for a barium structure. So it could be very well tied to surveillance, not so much as creating disease.
Well, anthrax, tuberculosis, desiccated blood, does that help the satellites at all?
Well, if that is shown and proven to be in those, no.
Yes, it has been shown and proven to be in there. And we've even got confirmation from General Jeremiah of the United Galactic Federation on that they have measured and determined what are in the chemtrails. And we've got numerous reports of these components going back to the serious testing that occurred at least in beginning in 2004.
I'm going to just tell you up front, I'm not an expert on chemtrails. So I'm speaking out of a lot of ignorance on those. So if you have that evidence, I'm just not up to that. I don't know about that. So I'll just defer on that question.
Okay. I'm just sort of connecting the dots because we see all these things going on simultaneously, and it appears we're gearing up for the final act, if you understand my meaning.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that.
Now, in relation to this lawsuit that we mentioned, the information that was brought forth and described. And I've not seen all of that personally. Remember, I even admitted that I've only been looking at this dimension of this whole issue for the past 3 days. What was the source of the information that Jane Burgermeister used?
Well, it's not just from me. A good portion of it was my documentation. A lot of it came from an NIH insider, a whistleblower named Alexander S. Jones, who put his neck, his job, his life on the line for this. He's lost his position. I haven't even been able to get a hold of him. I don't even know where he's at. You bet. A lot of the information that we really needed to prepare the case for indictment came from Alexander Jones's files in the NIH. So Dr. Bill Deagle, he has a tremendous background history of virology. Dr. Rebecca Carley added a lot of information. So it's a group effort. And again, we were putting this together in a form that could be given just a package of information to take to the channels that I mentioned before, into a united front going into a U.S. attorney. But see, what tragically happened is this Miss Burgermeister put her name on it as hers alone, added these, you know, people like Barack Obama and George Soros, all these really high-profile people that we had no idea how to even connect them, and basically began to spread this out to all anybody that would listen in public radio, claiming it was her charges and her documentation, and made the statement she had indeed filed criminal charges in America. It just flat out didn't happen.
Yes, and I've seen the court documents, and her name is not mentioned in anything I've seen so far.
And what was filed there in New Jersey is this other guy's poor excuse. I mean, you're right, it's a poor excuse for an injunction. And it has nothing to do with the 105 pages of summation that Jane put out and said it's her charges. Nothing whatsoever to do with that. So it's all just a big story for purposes of gaining notoriety on her. I mean, she did that for publicity. It's a publicity stunt, a flash in the pan. That's the only thing that could explain what's happened here.
Yeah. As I see it, again, standing outside the box, I see it as misdirection intended to discredit those who are coming out with.
And then she comes out and says on public radio all the time, oh, Truot and Bill Deagle, everybody's against me. They're persecuting poor me. I'm this big martyr that's put all this time and effort into it. It's my work, my charges. These guys don't want to play ball. Well, no. That's not what's happening at all. You know, we are the ones here in America that are on the ground fighting this. Jane's safe in a bungalow somewhere in Austria. She's not preparing this for a grand jury. We are. So who's really trying to throw monkey wrenches into the process?
Yes.
Not us.
Yes.
That's as plain as I can say it.
Yeah, and this is in an effort to keep the ruse going on because it's about making enormous sums of money.
I mean, speaking of money, she has on her blog a PayPal account, and she's taking, you know, anybody that give her any money at all. She's just taking quite a bit of it, I understand. So we've never, our team, myself included, have never taken a nickel. We won't take a nickel. We are putting out a lot of money to get this thing done, trust me. But we're not in this to take donations. It doesn't happen.
And I know personally of several instances where people are borrowing the money to contribute to this. And
sadly, people that can't afford to borrow the money.
Yes. So I think we've nipped that in the bud. Would you like to take some questions if we get some callers?
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
Okay. We've got an 800 line. Anyone who's on the website can certainly see this. Our toll-free number anywhere in the world is area code 888. There's those lucky eights. 815-9756. Again, that's 888-815-9756. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Andrew Ott, please join in the conversation. Let's talk about some things that folks can do now that we've handled, you know, the whole issue. I think people have an understanding of what's going on. I certainly do. From hearing your explanation more than once, you've not deviated from what you've talked about. What can people do other than saying no to this vaccine and realizing that this is a scare, that this is a ruse of sorts? I'm not saying no one has gotten sick, because there's obviously a virus lurking out there, and it seems to be lurking in the vaccine. Yes. What precautions can people take?
Well, the first thing is just understand that this vaccine coming is very, very dangerous. And if you don't believe me, that's fine. You have your own mind that you can make up. But do, like I said, demand to see an accurate label of what's in it before you have it put into your body.
We should get an accounting of what would happen, too.
Yeah, it's called two words, informed consent. Don't consent, folks, until you're fully informed. That's the biggest piece of advice I can give you. Secondly, if you want to really protect yourself from the virus, the reality is, and you know, just saying this could get me arrested, all right? Because we're crossing the line here. I have to be very careful in what I say now. But the reality is, oxygen kills viruses. Ozone structures kill viruses. I'm telling you, there is not a virus under the sun, from the Marburg virus to the African green monkey viruses, that just don't die immediately by oxygenation. There was an incredible research doctor back in the 1920s by the name of William Frederick Koch. That's spelled K-O-C-H. His family has put all of his documents and writings and publications in a website, www.williamfkoch.com. Now, what you find with Dr. Koch is he stumbled on a very exciting mineral substrate. He called it a carbonyl mineral grouping that would react in the bloodstream with the carbon-based sugars, this blood sugar structures, and create a burst of nascent oxygen throughout the whole body. All natural, very, very safe, and he was reversing so many viral disease loads that it was just incredible. What did he get for his research and in reward? He was hounded, stripped of his medical licensing, and eventually served some time in Rockefeller jail. You see, this breakthrough had the real, real strong potential of disenfranchising the entire petrochemical-based pharmaceutical model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned William F. Koch, and Jim Murray brought up that the Violet Ray machine was co-created with Koch and Tesla working together.
All right, and right there, and I have the whole documentation of that in Detroit, how the so-called mafia gang called the Purple Gang came forth from Chicago. Again, there's that wonderful Windy City, coming there to Detroit and basically destroying the whole plant of the Purple Wave, Purple Beam machine. But you know what? I have the original patents. I have, I've recreated the machine, and he's exactly right.
We've got some callers here, Drew. If I can interrupt you, try to remember where you were. If you want to say more about that, they've been on hold for a little bit. David in Washington, Welcome to Evident Footprints. Do you have a comment or question for Dr. Truat?
Good evening to you, Don, and True.
Thank you. Good evening to you.
Okay. Thank you. I was so glad to hear you, True, talking about the area that you had to be very careful in moving into with your discussion. I've utilized that kind of technology myself, and it does work. And there's some others. There's a doctor down in Mexico. I'm almost reluctant to say anything about it to get the word out because I'm sure that the powers that be are aware of these things, but you just want to be careful. But what you were talking about, it's true. It really works, and the ozone and the oxygenation, and there are things that can be acquired if people want to search for it and find out about it without giving it all away.
But well, there's a group out of Oklahoma that has this technology. I just want to give their toll-free number because it's not. You know, it's something that I can refer. I know people that have had this virus, have utilized this, their little product, and literally we've seen it knock out within hours. So if you're concerned, give this. Don't even mention my name or anything. Just call them. Ask for their oxygen product. 877-338-3340 is their toll-free number. We're not again. They're not making any claims whatsoever, other than this product is what Dr. Koch basically pioneered. That's all.
One other thing I'd like to mention, Don. You talked about the Purple Ray machine. I've read about that. I have one of the Rife type machines also that I bought maybe 2 years from a doctor down in Albuquerque. And he's also on the web, very conscientious and dynamic fellow. And the other, I've got that, and then the other machine that Jim was talking about the other night was from Dr. Beck. You recall his name?
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, that was, I think, a follow-up to the research that Koch and Tesla were doing together.
That was brought into existence, that machine that Beck designed was brought into existence from a couple of fellows at Albert Einstein in New York University, I believe, were working with running currents through virally contaminated in a dish or two,
uh-huh.
A test tube, and they noticed that it immobilized the viruses, so they wanted to pump the blood out of people, put it through a machine, and charge you $50,000, and then reintroduce the blood in the other arm or wherever.
Yeah.
But Beck came up with the idea of just making the two little electrodes to put on your wrist with a 9-volt battery built up to 27 volts, and it pulses 4 times per second.
Yes.
There's a place in Canada that has these available. I bought a couple from a company in California and put them together myself, and it works. Yeah, I just did a treatment the other day after being reminded from your conversation Friday night.
Okay. Well, David, I want to thank you for your call. We got to move on.
Yes.
We've got another caller. So
thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
For calling in. Thanks for your comments. Well, there you go. Now, Dr. Ott, we have on the line with us Elizabeth Book. I think that name may be familiar to you.
It is familiar.
Okay, Elizabeth, are you with us?
I am.
Welcome to Evident Footprints. Comment or question for Dr. A. Truat?
Well, yeah, I'm the lady that filed the criminal charges in Daytona and borrowed the money for that attorney up in New Jersey. And, you know, When you hear things, first I'm hearing that they're planning to give children these vaccinations, and then I read Jane's explosive file. You know, I reacted with my heart and soul. I reacted to protect my country and our people. And from what I'm hearing, you know, filing those charges is probably going to be totally ineffective anyhow. Filing lawsuits in the courts probably isn't going to work either. And now I'm broke. I've borrowed as much money as I possibly can. What's the next step for someone whose heart and soul says, we can't see this happen, we can't go down this way? What should we, as individual citizens, do?
Well, that's a very good question, and my heart goes out to you for what's happened to you, okay? What I can say pretty assuredly is all you've accomplished is to put your name on a list. When you filed that charges that way in Daytona, I can promise you that Homeland Security is alerted and probably a Secret Service agent or two. Okay.
Fortunately, most of the people in Florida know that, you know, I do love our Constitution, and I'm a great patriot of the United States of America, and I'd hate to see them come at me and try to say different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully they're just saying, well, you know, maybe she was misguided.
Well, that's probably what's happening. But the reality is it's not going to do a thing because it's not the proper channel, okay? And that's
right.
What we really need to stress. This type of thing, you can't go down to your local courthouse and put a 105-page document down and pay your fee. It's a total waste of time and money, unless you want some publicity and a TV camera behind you. Okay?
No, well, I haven't done anything like that, only through this man that I never met on a telephone, you know, who called Jane and then was referred to me through her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm just saying is that you've learned where to go with this and where not to go, okay, hopefully. We want activism. We want people like Liz Book to get active in their local communities, and one person can make a huge difference if their energies are channeled correctly. You need to have the correct documentation of the systematic structures of this. And you need to alert your local and state health departments, and don't stop. They work for you, Liz. You don't work for them.
Okay.
Okay? That's how you can make a difference.
That seems like a real strong way to go at it. Do you have these documents available?
Absolutely.
You know, can I get a look at them and then
you bet. Absolutely.
Read them?
That was going to be my next question. Can you give out a web address or... is there a way you prefer? If you want to give them to me, I'll post them on my website.
Absolutely, but we have a really nice community toolbox established at our website, pandemicfluonline.com. Again, that's pandemicfluonline.com. Go on there, click on the community toolbox section. You'll see just a plethora of professional documents. They're free. You got to pay a nickel for them, okay? We don't ask for any donations whatsoever. You'll have flyers. The Raggedy Ann story, which is a powerful story. You know the story of that? The Raggedy Ann doll was made because a father lost his daughter to a vaccine. She became limp and motionless like a rag doll. That's the story of Raggedy Ann. You can download that piece with a flyer, all free. Go on the site and get it done. You can take that into your local Kinko's, make their trifold structures. You can make them into a flyer. You know, spend $15-$20 and just hand them out in the corner, because you know what? The documentation is so non-threatening and just gets people thinking. That's what needs to happen. We don't need to be sensationalist and grandstanding and saying he or she is right or wrong. No. We need to get to grassroots and get this thing working. That's what Pandemic Flu Online is about. That's
good.
What we're about, okay?
Good advice. Elizabeth, I want to say on behalf of all the people out there listening tonight who I know understand your plight, and if they put themselves in your position, they probably are wondering where they would have mustered up the courage or the caring and the love that you expressed in just offering to help this situation, not knowing exactly what was involved and all that. You trusted what your heart spoke to you, and what goes around comes around, and I think you'll be able to hold your chin up and know that you did the right thing and that the wrongs that have been done to you will be corrected. I sense that in my spirit. So I want to thank you. We've got another caller, so I've got to let you go, but thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you, Liz. Good to hear your voice.
Same here.
Okay, we got another caller here, Kevin in Ontario, Canada. Welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hello there.
Hello, Kevin.
How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Hello there, Dr. Ott. And, sir, Dr. Ott, I have to say I greatly admire the courage that you and the ones like you and Jane Burgemeister and others that have been coming out with a lot of this information to help people in, at least try to prepare for what's going to be going down. I'm one of 20 people who are in the Wake Up Project on Pal Talk, where we're all listening to you guys and admiring the work that you're doing. The question I have for you, Dr. Ott, is if and when they do try to push all this swine flu vaccinations, and they do vaccinate the people, which is going to be the problem. What would be the best place for people to do, especially those that do not want to take the vaccination? Should they get out of the cities and go to rural areas? What would be the best thing for people to do in this time? Are the cities going to be like a very veritable no man's land, so to say?
Well, I'm a strong advocate to say get your backbone up instead and stop it and fight now. Again, like we just told Liz, you can get your communities involved just again by one person at a time, and then it doubles and it triples and it quadruples. The evidence is there. It's so in your face. There's no doubt about it anymore. Then you've got to just, I really strongly recommend not getting a fear-based attitude with this. Okay, be proactive, but not fear-based. Because
absolutely
that's
not. I've always said that.
Yeah,
I've always told people that they never give in to fear, but just to know what's going on and who's really behind this quite frankly, this atrocity that we're going through with this whole swine flu thing, which I strongly also feel that is an attempt at depopulation and decentralized control.
Yeah,
right.
There's
no doubt
about that. And I also want to stress that we're not trying to belittle anyone's reputation here. We're just dealing with the facts. And the facts show over and over again that this is a concerted effort to do what you just described, Kevin, and what Dr. Ott described. And those of us that understand what is going on have to take responsibility. You know, each one of us, this is a recurring theme on the show, too. I talk a lot about responsibility. We have as much responsibility to do something about it as we do for allowing it to occur and doing nothing about it. We're responsible either way.
Absolutely.
I think it makes sense for us to put a stop to this. It really does. There's no reason to mince words.
Dr. Ott, I do have one more question before I have to go. How about colloidal silver, colloidal gold? How would they help to combat this virus?
Well, they depends on the concentration and how it's structured. Okay, the way silver works is basically it attacks the viral structure in its cellular wall. Okay, it's a specific resonant frequency that does that. Viruses have been tested against silver at places like BYU. It's pretty broad spectrum, but it's not as effective in any way, as effective as the oxygen structures. I mean, that's a safe assumption. If I were to do silver, gold doesn't really affect much against the virus. Silver, zinc, and iodine are great antivirals. But use them in conjunction with the oxygen therapy that I just told you about, and you'll have a pretty good defense.
Great. Talking about the oxygenating the food, somebody is telling me, saying that to go to a health food store and get food grade hydrogen peroxide and to mix it with water. Would that be a way to go about it?
That's one way. Hydrogen peroxide is just H2O2. It's an extra oxygen molecule.
Yes.
Hydrogen peroxide kills viruses on contact. But it's much better to do Dr. Koch had found and get into that that carbonyl structure.
Okay.
Great.
Kevin,
thanks
for your call. We're out of time here, but do call in again. Keep listening to the show and tell your friends about us. Okay, do we still have you, Dr. Ott?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, he's gone. Okay, I didn't hear his goodbye, so I wasn't sure if anybody got disconnected. Well, we're in the closing moments here. I have so many questions that I didn't ask, and I know that you were making a point before all these calls started coming in, and they were all very pertinent. Do you have any message, any closing remark that you would like to leave with the audience that they can rest assured that something can be done about this?
Well, yes, and it's very, very important to know that the whole word, the root word of pandemic is pan-ic. It comes from the pantheon of demons called the Panis. Okay, they only succeed in their agenda if people become fear-based and panic with this thing. Understand this, that we gave you some real simple ways of combating this thing. Again, let me just give this number out one more time. I really highly recommend these people, 877-338-3340. Ask for the oxygen therapy drops. It's a two-part system. You mix them together, then consume it. And I'm telling you, the in vivo and in vitro studies that I have done on it, it's just amazing. Folks, remember this one thing, and it's a little mantra that you can use. Fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. And nobody was there. Okay, you need to be right with your faith, and understand that this is an agenda that is going to only be defeated if you're awake and have strong faith to combat it. I'm talking about faith in knowledge of truth. Thomas Edison said it best. He said, faith in fiction is nothing but a damnably false hope. Make sure you don't have faith in a false person, a false information that's coming out. Make sure you have faith in reality and solid scientific background with this. And then you'll be okay. Enough people, if tens of thousands of people in Avery City were armed with the knowledge of truth with this, they'd never succeed 1 minute with this. And armed with this oxygen therapy, let them release a virus. It'll go away with oxygen. Simple truth. No
very,
need to fear.
Very sound advice. Now, if you would, one more time, please, True, for the folks that maybe didn't have a pen and paper to write down your website and the name or how they can find the documents that you referred to.
Right. It's just very simple. www.pandemicfluonline.com. Pandemicfluonline.com. And click on the community toolbox. You'll see, again, just a wealth of information there. All easy to use and download.
Yes, thank you. We are out of time, but I want to thank you very, very much for coming on the show and staying on so late, as well as our engineer, Seth. We made him work over a little bit tonight, but he's also enjoying the show. I'm sure there are millions around the world who are soaking up this information like a sponge, and you are going to be on the show every Monday for the rest of the month of August. So I want to let the listening audience know that you will be back and we'll be talking about this some more. Let's see what transpires in the meantime as well with the new facts that came out on tonight's show. I say new here in this venue, but we're piecing things together in real time, too, connecting
Absolutely.
The dots.
And, Don, thank you for your work and your effort to get this word out. It's just amazing what you've done, and thank you.
Well, it's my duty. I love my country, like Liz Book said. I love my country. I love the Constitution, and we are witnessing some very strange times right now. And by pulling together, people coming together, we can overcome. So. I thank you, and I'll look forward to seeing you again on Evident Footprints next Monday.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Okay, you too. Folks, you've been listening to Dr. Atru Ott on Evident Footprints, and you can visit his website and get those free documents. I urge you to go to pandemicfluonline.com. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, all the folks in the Wind Talkers Radio Network, and those listening on blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing this program with the world. I wish everyone in the listening audience a night or a day filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.